What should we change the names of the positions to in today's game? Is LeBron a coachable player? And where will Luke Walton end up coaching? The only question left is, say it with me, you win. Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown Podcast. I sincerely hope that you are listening to this on our mobile app, and if you are not, then your computer quite conceivably might melt down and blow up in front of your face. And I am pleased today to bring on my buddy Brian to talk more about solving the NBA's problems. So, Brian, how is the solving business going?
The solving business is very lucrative and very exciting, and it's all happening.
I wonder who we're going to get sponsored by today.
Who is sponsoring us today? I think it's the 3M Corporation, isn't it?
Wow, yes. 3M making audio tape, I believe, right?
Post-it notes and supplies and everything. Everything under those tanks. I think they make airplane turbines. Yes. You name it. They just do it all. Yeah.
I'm sure somebody walked into their office one day and said, hey, there's like this whole digital revolution thing. They're like, ah! No, post-it notes.
Exactly, yes.
That's the future.
The wave of the future. Yes, this is the wave of the future. Just sticky in one little part of it. The rest of it, no, it's fine.
That's right. So,
thank you, 3M Corporation.
Well, we have our own post-it notes today. And on the first one, I thought we could talk a little bit about what happened in Toronto with the Blake Griffin situation. We had Dan Wojcicki on yesterday, shameless plug, to talk about it on our podcast. And so... you have an interesting take.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I'm not a reporter. I know nothing more than what I'm reading in the news, but it feels like every story at this point is kind of following the same narrative, which is, you know, they're just a couple of really close friends and they got into some silly argument and they were drinking and things turned a little bit. And that's kind of like the tone of every story, and every quote is like how they're such good buddies and all this stuff, and maybe they were or are, I don't know, I'm not there, but I hate that narrative so much. It like gets into my it makes my soul cry.
Wow.
And yes, it does. It is, because look, again, I have no idea what happened. I have no idea what was said or how horrible, but like there's this inequity in this relationship, if it was a friendship, between just on paper, between these two gentlemen. And it's like, you know, Blake he's a very big, strong, rich, powerful, famous athlete. And the other guy is some dude who's got a job with the Clippers. And there's this imbalance between, even physically, one of them is very tall, one is very small, one is big and strong, one seems to be a slighter build, one is very rich, one probably not so much. And the fact that, like, the guy who has everything seems to have just beaten the crap out of the guy who has nothing. And then it's like, well, you know, that's what happens among friends. You know, it feels so dismissive of something that's just so wrong. You know, again, yeah. I have no idea what was said, but like that piece of it, it just hurts.
The last time we hung out and had drinks, I beat the shit out of you. What was wrong
you
with
did.
That?
You did. But that was, you know, that was deserved. That was absolutely deserved.
Right.
It was
you
totally
asked
my
for
fault.
It.
I'd made that comment. It got taken awry. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what happens it was my bad for hanging out with you in Toronto. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I never saw drinking as part of this whole thing. Did you throw it in there, or is that part of what you read?
No, that's part of what I read. They said they were several drinks in at some sort of bar restaurant.
Getting hammered in the middle of the season. That said, he was still on, you know, injured, but he was about to come back. That's also interesting.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. Like, I've never, you know, I had a tweet out. I'm like, how easy is it to break your hand with a punch? And it was funny because I got a lot of responses. Some were like, oh, it's real easy if you get at the right spot. Other guys were like, no, you got to hit pretty hard. But here's the worst part about it, which is, you know, when a couple of details have come out, was that he started to beat on the guy in the restaurant.
Right.
And then followed him out of the restaurant and continued to beat on him more. So that is also an issue where, you know, there was a bit of a cooling off period where the first punch, and all of a sudden you guys look at each other, you know, scared, like, oh gosh, what did I just do? And then it was more like, you know, primal rage where he can't stop. He did tweet out an apology. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
I just noticed this yesterday. He tweeted out, and it is. Did
his publicist tweet out? I mean, did he tweet out an apology?
Yeah, they used a very. It wasn't Comic Sans font. He writes, a situation among friends escalated, and I regret the way I handled myself towards someone I care about. I want to apologize to the Clippers organization, my teammates, and the fans for creating a distraction. I am working with the team on a resolution and getting back in the game as soon as possible. So, didn't even really say sorry. Oh, I did. I want to apologize. Okay, so he did say I want to apologize.
I want to. Does that, when you're saying I want to apologize, is that the same thing as saying I do apologize?
Or yeah,
is it saying,
no, like, not at all.
I would hope that I could apologize. Like, that is something I desire, is the ability to apologize.
And, you know, he doesn't apologize to the guy he broke his hand, his face on.
No, wait, what does it say again? Who does he apologize to?
I want to apologize to the Clippers organization. Now, I guess you can consider him part of that. And then, my teammates and the fans.
Yeah.
So, the guy was beat up. They got to take him to the hospital, right? Did you read that?
Yeah. He was, I think he's pretty messed up. I mean, I don't know, but it's not like there's been a photo of him in public since this happened.
Right. You know,
his 5'8" face got hit so hard by Blake's 6'10" hand that the hand got broken.
Multiple times, right? I mean, that's the thing for me. Yeah. It's a problem. Adam Silver was caught on DMZ. They interviewed him and he did it, interestingly enough. And he intimated that Blake's a nice guy. He's always been a friend of everybody and this and that, whatever. And that, you know, there will be, you know, consequences are usually, you know, in order here. But, like, it sounded like an aw shucks moment
Have I told you my new theory on the Clippers, which is I think that Donald Sterling was Saddam Hussein. That, yeah, he was horrible, but when they got rid of him, everything got worse. I just think everything's just gotten like maybe he was the horrible dictator who kept it all together. Like, I don't know. everything is just now worse. There's this terrible power vacuum and everyone's fighting each other.
It's interesting because you remember Bill Simmons had this big bombshell that nothing ever came out of, where he made it seem like everything is all falling apart there. And then, you know, I've asked some people around and everyone kind of shrugs and is like, well, you know, there's nothing that's out of the ordinary. But I don't know. I don't know if I wonder with Donald Sterling what he would feel like if he knew that we were comparing him to the Saddam Hussein role.
Exactly. I think that makes the woman with the visor, she's Chemical Ali. Like, I really can't extend the metaphor to Uday and Kuse. I don't know where it goes from here, but I'm gonna lock it in at Sterling as Saddam. I'm gonna stop right there.
Okay, yeah. that's probably not a bad idea.
They both made a lot of money in the 90s. Like,
yes, they did. Wow. And they're both
going to be more to it.
I have a feeling. I wouldn't be surprised if we found Donald Sterling in some sort of spider hole somewhere right now, too.
In the bunker, yes. All right. I think we could continue this. Tell your Twitter followers to continue the metaphor. They'll lock it down for you.
Yeah, sure.
They'll make it happen.
That's always welcome. I have such a great time on Twitter most of the time. Anyway, yeah, let's put that out there. Although I did tweet out just a second ago, that I said it was funny that people don't trace Draymond Green's lineage to LeBron James.
Ooh. Explain.
In terms of position, which we'll get to a little bit later, but, you know, his position that Draymond plays should be what LeBron James had been doing for several years before that and really won't embrace. And as a result, we don't see the connection there, but it's kind of there even though it's not.
Interesting.
You know, LeBron James should be that defensive player.
Right.
He should be playing, you know, power forward and then actually overwhelming guys because he's got better size than Draymond does, but he won't. So it's this weird thing where I'm like, you know, in a different world, that in my more perfect world, LeBron James would have been the first Draymond.
Well, does he feel like, is it the kind of thing like with this current roster that the Cavs have that, you know, there's so many big bodies on it that maybe he doesn't feel like he has to do it?
I don't know. I mean, it just seems clear everybody knows and sees it and I do, like they would be better. Not that, again, do they need to be better what they are? And that's the other question is he just kind of coasting until the playoffs? Does he have enough experience now where he'll say, you know, I don't need to play hard on defense and do these things. I need to conserve energy. And
Which, by the way, would be a completely legitimate way for him to play at this point in his career, you know?
Yeah, I guess so.
Either, you know, they're going to win enough games that they'll probably will have home court through the Eastern Conference playoffs, right? And so they go on the road for the finals, and he can serve some energy. It's probably the way he should play.
All right, I guess so.
At this point in his career.
I don't know.
That's the Spurs way. We praise the Spurs for doing it.
Well, no, the Spurs will do it. They'll just sit the guy for the whole game. But while they're out there, right, they're not, like, obviously conserving energy like we see LeBron do, right?
But I wonder if, would the Cavs ever be allowed to sit LeBron? Like, wouldn't that be a problem for, you know, wouldn't they make a big thing about, like, the guys who are buying, you know, people who are buying tickets for the road games or the home games to go see LeBron and he's not playing?
Yeah, you know, like, it's funny because it happened with Melo when Melo played in the All-Star game, you know, and then he just basically just took the rest of the season off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, what if I saved all my money early in the year and, you know, to go buy a ticket? I want my kid to see Melo, right? And then he just doesn't show up.
Yes, would you pay all that money for your kid to see Melo though? Would that be where the money would go?
I would put that money in the escrow somewhere until about a rainy day. But, you know, that's clearly a thing. Even like with Kobe was different because he really was banged up. But like the point being for there was that Melo, you know, he didn't look so injured in the All-Star game.
Right.
You know, not enough to be like shut down and shut it down. I mean, there's a whole reason why they were doing that as far as, you know, the pick and whatever. But and without that, we wouldn't have Porzingis. So, I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know, from my point of view, when you see what you know, it's like we know how good LeBron is and can be. Although that said, it's possible he can't turn it on anymore on the defensive end.
Yeah, there will come there will come that moment, right? It happens to all the greats. There will come that moment where he can't do it anymore. But you know, I guess until we see him not do it for a long time, we don't really know. We can still. You know, I think he still gets the benefit of the doubt for a while until you know for sure that he can't do it.
Okay.
Like, see if he's playing this way in the playoffs, and then.
Okay. You know, all right.
That's my take on it.
Okay. Well, does that bring us?
That's my hot official take.
Yes. And before our last podcast, you know, the David Blatt hadn't been fired yet, and we kind of talked about, you know, what was going on there. Do we want to talk at all about that?
Sure, why not? Let's do it. Yeah, we were talking about it. Didn't we had a conversation about, like, would they fire Blatt? I think we said in the offseason, and we were talking about replacing him with Tibbs.
Yeah.
And instead they replaced him 3 seconds later with Ty Lue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did a breakdown of it, and it kind of went viral, and people really responded. I mean, it was kind of an evisceration of LeBron James. And you know, because basically the conceit for the video was, you know, if they weren't going to beat the Spurs and the Warriors, then they had to fire the coach and change something so that would work. Okay, then the question is, why couldn't they beat them? And then I just said, okay, here is why. Their defense was terrible, and it started with LeBron. Plus this notion of them throwing a game, which was reported. And I looked through it, and I saw some stuff that didn't look kosher to me. But you know, it was a second of a back to back on the road after an emotional game. So there has to be a big asterisk against for that.
Yeah, I think you know, the infuriating thing for me again, and you know, going back to the today's theme of bullying, but like, and this is maybe different, but like, so. Immediately, like, they fire Blatt, and like immediately in the press release, the first thing he said is LeBron didn't know. Like LeBron, he had no idea. We just did this without him. Which, you know, then that became the narrative of like I had no idea. They fired this guy. You know, what did I know? And that was so obviously untrue that, like, so you know, I'm not a crook kind of stuff. You know, it was so blatantly untrue, mm-hmm. that kind of made it feel a little yucky.
I agree. And I also think that what I was going to say about that. Like clearly. Oh, here's the thing. Let's just pretend that it's true.
OK, it's true.
What kind of GM would ever do that and not tell the, right. the star?
Like, right, exactly.
That's horrible. That would be the worst. That'd be worse.
Right.
So, anyway, so that was my take and my conceit as well. So it's a problem altogether, and there's a lot of things. He was never accepted. And then you got to kind of figure out why. I feel at the pro level, it's on the players. They need to, like, you know, to accept the coach when they first get there. I just feel like that needs to be the explicit agreement. It might change over time, but not like you can't just sort of dismiss. He's an outsider. He doesn't know it. Whatever. He's an idiot. I'm not going to listen to him. That just seemed to be wrong.
Well, I think that's kind of like basic human behavior. Like, treat people with respect. Treat people until they prove they're undeserving of it. You know, it's like golden rule stuff. Treat people respectfully. Be nice. And it wasn't a very nice situation.
Yeah, and then they had the guy who was a part owner of the Heat go speak in Hebrew.
Oh yeah,
which is really exciting. And I actually had a journalist who I know who's fluent in Hebrew. She was able to tell me that, you know, clearly this guy, the reporter, just made up what he said. He never said specifically that he tried to get Spoelstra fired.
Oh, really? He made it up? Are you kidding?
Well, he didn't say that. So the owner never said that, but he inferred from what he said, and that because it was in Hebrew and no one could read it, like, it was not even out of context. It was just a misquote. But here's the thing that I believe it does exist in that interview was, there was a meeting with Riley and LeBron, and Riley said, you know, Spoelstra is our coach. Now, you know, you don't walk in, hi LeBron, hi Pat, Spoelstra is our coach. Like, it doesn't come out the second thing you say. That generally comes out.
Do you like Spoelstra? Check this box.
Yeah, yeah, that comes out generally in a conversation where you're like, I don't want the coach to be here. And then Riley says, Eric Spoelstra is our coach.
Right.
And then you read also what Riley said in this press conference after LeBron left, and there was a lot of veiled or unveiled references in there. So, you have to imagine that, like, you know, we know that the Mike Brown thing was most likely from him too, and he left anyway.
Right.
And at the first time, and now, you know, and then, you know, he didn't get along with Spoelstra for a lot of it. We know that there was a lot of issues there. So there's just a weird, you know, issue there, because he doesn't seem to, you know, value the role of the coach or really know what the coach's role is supposed to be.
Right. Now, again, there's sort of a question, like, if he was playing for Phil Jackson, would he, you know, would it be different? And it's hard to know. It's hard to know for sure. But, like, it's fairly clear that he's not necessarily been kind to the coaches. And frankly, whatever he did, the rest of the team was going to do as well in Cleveland. Like, everybody was going to follow his lead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the other, you know, 12, 14 guys on the roster could be like, nope, we're going to listen to him. It just wasn't going to work that way. So.
But the only other thing, the troubling conundrum here is that generally LeBron James plays like a well-coached player. He makes the pass when he's supposed to. He knows the play. Like, he does play that way. Unlike, you know, just to throw this out there, like a Kobe Bryant, who tends to go on his own a lot and drove Phil Jackson crazy, and probably, you know, short of demanding of hire somebody else. You know, Phil didn't come back after that last run, and then remember they brought him back later. But, you know, Kobe wasn't lobbying for Phil to stay. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you know, it's actually a very interesting point you make. LeBron plays like a great teammate. His game is, you know, he passes. He plays like a really, really good teammate. It's weird. There's this strange dichotomy to him because, you know, sometimes he does things that are just immensely likable, and the other times, you know, he does the decision, and there's like he's like two characters.
Right. That said, more recently he's not played as much of that. Like even what we saw in the finals last time. Because here's the thing with the finals, you know, there's no way that you know, the offense they ended up running because of they were missing Love and Kyrie, you know, was basically like ISO, back and down, back and down. no matter what you tell me, there's no way that Blatt would have ever agreed to that game plan. He would have, and he would have been like, well, I mean, only because this is what I would have done, being a guy who's coached, like, you know, Princeton type offense with motion and trying, you know, he'd be like, no, we need more movement to help your gravity open up shots for our lesser players so that, you know, otherwise they're not going to be able to help us at all. And instead, you know, they got what they got, which is what they're going to lose to the Warriors every time. And by the way, they did it again in this last game when they got destroyed. They went with Love, with Kyrie. They went right back to ISO LeBron James stuff. And it's just, I just don't believe it was ever Blatt's choice to do that anyway.
No, it's going to help them win the title in 1992, but maybe not this year.
Yes, they need 1.21 gigawatts of power.
Yeah, do you think David Blatt said something bad about the movie Trainwreck, or like there was something else in there? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now the smear campaign's coming out against everybody, where like you hear some stuff about Blatt, and he constantly kept saying, well, you know, I'm not a rookie, I'm this and that, whatever, and it was like, you know, I guess I would have had to been there and hear it and see it just to sort of figure out what that means. As far as, you know, was that really grating on everybody or not, you know, like they're saying? Who knows? Not a good fit, I guess, either way.
Probably not, you know, and look, you know, hopefully maybe it'll make Cleveland Gel as a team and help there. And, you know, hopefully Blatt will get another shot to sort of prove what he can do. It would be, you know, if that next shot comes in Brooklyn and he gets to play with that roster and the traded picks and everything else that comes with it, that might be a little bit dicey for him, but you know,
yeah,
who knows? Let's see what he can do.
You know, it's quite possible that Brooklyn can't hire another coach for a while. Like
that they're going to go coachless for
like,
for
yeah,
time?
Like, well, I mean, it depending on who they want to hire, like, I don't know. I feel like some guys are going to turn the job down.
That is, well, coaches who can turn the job down probably will turn the job down. Right. Those who don't have to take it may do so. God, they really painted themselves in a corner, huh? In Brooklyn.
They did. They did it. The second there was never a moment where this was going to work. Like I ever thought it was going to work and be worth it. I mean, I think that's the point.
Right.
And so, yeah, the biggest thing I'm impressed with is how long King was able to hang on before they fired him anyway.
Right.
You know, I mean, listen, a job is a job in this market. You don't want to lose your job, you know. But at some point, it was almost like he would have stepped down before doing what they made him do, if that's the case.
And he's still around, isn't he? Isn't he still there, like, picking his successor?
I don't know.
I think he's still hanging around there.
Huh. Okay. Well, listen.
Which, if that's true, is magnificent. I love that. It's just wonderful.
Well, it's a New York thing. You know, Isaiah Thomas is still around.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes. Yes, he is.
So, you know, I don't know. It's just a mess. Can you name, like, four players in the Nets?
Brooke Lopez?
Yeah.
Brooke Lopez?
You know, there's
Joe Johnson.
Johnson. Yeah.
Yes, they have Joe Johnson. They have,
you know. See, it's not that easy either. It's weird.
Yeah, like, now I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, I was just going through it. And, you know, they have Jared Jack, who's now not playing.
Oh, right, he's not working. Oh, Thad Young.
Thaddeus Young, you know. But, you know, they're not like household names. They got Bargnani, you might forget that. Anyway, it's a weird team, and they're toiling in obscurity in a way that's just weird.
Well, they're going to have, you know, they're going to have a lot of money to spend next year. But again, there's going to be nobody to spend the money on, and they don't have picks. Their picks are gone.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, problematic.
Well, let's move on to our homework that we had.
Ooh, yeah, let's talk about our homework assignment.
So our homework assignment last episode, if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it now. Shameless plug. And we decided, we were talking about positions and, you know, point guard, shooting guard. And they don't really apply.
Thing of the past.
What's that?
A thing of the past, those are.
They are. They really don't apply.
Those are your grandfather's positions.
They are grandfather's positions, absolutely. They're your uncle's, great uncle's position.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided, okay, and I thought it'd be interesting if we come up with the names of positions based on players that they represent.
Okay.
So I came up with a nice list. Did you have something organized?
Yeah, but mine are, go through yours and let's see if I have anything that isn't covered by yours.
Okay, great. So I started out with the first position name is the Russell Westbrook.
Okay.
And these also could be Subway sandwiches if you like. So if you want to do that, and we can figure out what kind of, you know, meat and cheese are on it. But Russell Westbrook, the score first point guard, athletic, you know, the guys who are like that, I would put in that category, like, you know, John Wall, Derrick Rose, Damian Lillard, Reggie Jackson.
Yep.
So what do you think about that?
I had a category, which is the shoot first point guards. I called it Isaiah Thomas, but I don't know why. But yes, that's what I was. I'm with you on that one.
Absolutely. Add Isaiah. The second coming.
Right. Why would I name it after Russell Westbrook when I can name it after Isaiah Thomas for obvious reasons?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I think that that's a clear cut role.
Absolutely.
Where perhaps in the past it would have been discouraged and we didn't have as many of those kind of players. Or that style at that position, but without question, now it's here to stay.
Yep.
So my next position then is the Chris Paul, the classic point guard, distributor, scores when the team needs it. You know, yep. Can D up. So I had guys like, you know, Mike Conley, even like, you know, this iteration of Darren Williams is a little bit like that. Rondo, Rubio, Ish Smith, even.
Yes.
What do you think? Do you have that role?
I do. I had called it the pass first point guards. But basically, I think we're agreeing that there's two categories of point guards now.
Well, we can't even use the term point guard, can we?
I think we're saying the classic point guard one is sort of in these two arenas now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like the smaller primary ball handler.
Yes, exactly. Yes. The shoot first ball handler and the pass first ball handler.
Right. Because we might have ball handlers that are, you know, wings that are taller. Right. So,
right.
But there is a real, you know, narrow 5'10 to 6'4 ish, you know, guy that we're looking at pretty much. So
exactly. Speedy, slighter build.
Cute.
Cute.
And, yeah.
Respectful.
Yes. All right. So let's move on. So we have the Russell Westbrook, the Chris Paul. That kind of covers it for that. Then I move on to, like, you know, the Dwayne Wade.
Okay.
Which was the, you know, the Michael Jordan in the past, but the Dwayne Wade, you know, the classic shooting guard. He shoots, doesn't really assist that much. That's not his role. Now, the funny thing is, I kind of threw James Harden in there, but I'm realizing now that that's not. James Harden probably deserves to be in the Russell Westbrook category.
Ooh, you think?
Well, he assists probably better than any of those guys, doesn't he?
Yeah, but isn't he more of like a combo player?
I don't know. This is, you know, our first conundrum of the day.
He's a bigger guy. He's,
yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, it's a tough one. But he averages 7 assists a game. That's more than some of the guys in our, you know.
But also 6 rebounds.
Yeah, that's true. Well, okay. So, but you can't.
But
can,
like,
we put
Michael Jordan? How many? Like, Michael Jordan got assists, but he was, you know, he was a classic two guard.
All right. Let's put him in there then. Let's keep it simple.
Okay.
So the Dwayne Wade, you know, we can put James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, Wes Matthews. So then you have another subset of there where you get like the Nick Young, J.R. Smith guy.
Okay.
And that goes Lou Williams, right?
So is that, so what, how would you define that then?
Although there is a, you know, perhaps you want to, you know, J.R. Smith's supposed to be coming off the bench. Then you could be like the Vinnie Johnson, you know, the microwave role, right?
Oh, like just the instant offense guy, the Del Curry?
Yeah. Like, you know, the problem is the guys like Nick Young and Lou Williams and J.R. Smith today, their shot selection is so much poorer than those guys used to have back in the day anyway, you know. Probably because they're like, shit, you know, if I don't take good shots, I'm not coming off the bench. I'm not going to play much. So these guys are still getting to play. I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Okay. But they're somewhere in that realm.
Well, could we have Gordon Hayward in the same category as Nick Young?
It doesn't feel right, does it?
This seems weird. I mean,
Gordon Hayward to me is more, I think he's a separate category. He's like a 2-3 hybrid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's its own. I think it's its own category.
Interesting. All right. Well, yes. I'll put him down. I got a list for that.
Okay.
Of, like, you know, strays and orphans.
So I'm looking at Hayward right now. Hayward's 6'8".
Oh, okay. He, you know, in shoes.
And she was, yes,
sopping wet.
Yes, yes, exactly. He's the Utah 6'8".
You know, yeah, right. The air
Southwest
is much thinner.
6'8", yeah.
You know, all right. So we have something there. All right, so we can take Gordon Hayward out of that list. So here's what we have. Like, you know, so we can keep James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, Wes Matthews. And I guess we can just keep Nick Young, J.R. Smith, and Lou Williams, and like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, those kind of guys, you know, of a similar size and a similar role. I can go with that.
Okay, fine.
All right, my next group is what I call the Leonard Butler.
Okay.
So you got like a elite wing defenders that can score, and so Leonard being Kawhi and the Butler being Jimmy.
Yes.
And so we have those two. Like you could throw Klay Thompson in there.
Mm-hmm.
I would even throw Jay Crowder in there. I really feel like he's been playing great, and he can score. You know, he's not getting huge numbers. I'm kind of going to check him out right now, but you know, he can score, and he's been doing nicely even more recently. He's averaging 14.5 points a game, 5 rebounds. You know, and that's only in 32 minutes a game. So his per 36 is 16 points. So that's not bad. That's getting somewhere in that area. Damari Carroll. I even put like Iman Shumpert, who has the ability to, you know, he can create a shot every now and then. Or Paul George also would be the top of that list.
Ooh, yes.
Anybody else we're missing?
Oh, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. It's a good category.
That's a good, and that seems to be a category, like, if you can get a guy like that, you're in good shape.
Right, that's who everybody seems to want to trade for right now. That's the guy who doesn't exist, and nobody will trade.
Yeah, because it's not quite 3 and D, by the way. Because right. All those guys can put the ball on the ground a little bit and create.
Right. You want that wing who can score.
Yeah. Who can just score. Not just shoot threes and score. Yeah. Like, not the Sofalosha, but the guy that can score. And so, yeah. And I think we're missing somebody in that list.
Yeah.
Because I'm saying elite wing defender. Because otherwise you can put, like, Kevin Durant in that list, couldn't you?
It's hard to think of Durant more as a pure wing like that, though.
I wish he'd post up more and like be more down low, but
right. I think you have another category for Durant, which I think makes more sense.
I do. Okay. All right. Yes. Should we move on to the next category then?
Sure. Move on to the next.
So the next one I called, you know, just in pure deference to old men, is the Kevin Garnett.
The Kevin Garnett.
And we used to have a lot of those kind of guys, you know, like the power forward that would shoot from 20 feet. It could post up a little bit and play great defense. So I think what you have here is like Chris Bosh, Serge Ibaka, Porzingis could go in there.
Okay.
Do you agree with that one?
I guess so, because yes, he can post up and yes, he can shoot threes and he's kind of oddly quick. I guess so. I mean, I guess that's where you would put him. I mean, he's not a classic center despite being 7'3". So I guess that's where you put him.
I just look at him as a tall, lanky, you know, in the body type kind of thing.
Right. I guess maybe Porzingis' height is the kind of thing. Like, if he were 6'10", you'd say absolutely he's in that category. But the fact that he's got those extra inches just throws him off.
Okay.
So I think you're onto something, yes.
Because I'm almost thinking of putting Karl Anthony Towns in there, too.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, because he can bury the 20-footer as good as those guys. He does post up. He does, you know, he's a player. He's going to be like that. He's another version of Kevin Garnett who can shoot threes even though they don't let him.
So this is sort of borderline the stretch four category.
Yeah, this could be the stretch four. I mean, I guess the thing is now Chris Bosh and Serge Ibaka do shoot threes.
Yes.
Whereas in the past they really hadn't. And then I guess you can't put Kevin Love in this category, can you?
Because of defensive components?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like this is where you get to the point where you almost need like positions almost need to be in two dimensions. It's like if you like you have the position and then you have some sort of a like a color chart from pure offense to pure defense and they're somewhere in the middle or they're closer to like the terror threat chart. You know, it's like, well, if they're closer to red, then they're more offense. If they're down towards blue, they're more defense. Or you could be in the middle somewhere.
Yeah,
there's multiple. Definitions to that. There's multiple dimensions at that point.
I'll give you your Rorschach text late after the show, and we'll find what you see in there. It's a real. This is a challenge because of where we are now in the game. I feel like this position has become very strange.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think that Kevin Love has all the hallmarks of this. You know, he scores, he rebounds. It's just the defense.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we can maybe make him a subset A, you know, subset D of that.
He's like a poor, he's like a poor defending stretch four.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, who else are we talking about then?
Yeah.
You know, who else is in that mold? I feel like we're missing some people then, like, you know, Ryan Anderson. I don't know if he kind of counts for that or, you know.
Yeah, I think he's in that mold. I think he's in that area.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just looking through here. You know, Gallinari.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else.
Yeah, you know,
would,
and I'm sure
would Dirk have been in this list? Dirk?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Dirk is in that list.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, again, we're morphing into more offensive stuff, although Dirk at some point was okay, but you can't compare Dirk's defense to Chris Bosh and Serge Ibaka.
No, he doesn't have, it's not the defense. Well, this is where the same thing we're getting to Kevin Love. There's different levels of defense in this position, but.
Okay.
I mean, well, I think the defensive guys tend to fall, I mean, this is going to be different than, you know, Kevin Garnett, obviously, but like they tend to fall in the, which I don't know if you have this or not. I have like, there's got to be, if there's a stretch four, maybe a classic four category.
Your
Taj Gibsons of the world.
Like the Buck Williams.
The Buck Williams.
That's what, I think
that's eternally what it should be. It should be the Buck Williams.
Yeah. Okay.
The Kevin McHale.
Yeah. Well, but Kevin McHale never shot like, you know, from outside, like Buck Williams could, you know, or even like, Horace Grant.
Okay. But I'm talking more of like a classic power. Yeah. But they weren't taking threes. Of course, Grant wasn't a three-point shooter.
No, he would. He, you know, he got. Remember, he killed the Bulls when he came back for the Magic, shooting like, you know, 17 footers. You know, and so did Buck Williams. He could do that pretty well. And it's also body type. To me, it's like the way they look. You know, that's why there's a certain, like, you know, the way they move, the way they look. It's like there's a similarity there.
Karl Malone.
Right, Karl Malone. That's somebody we don't have that anymore. No one's that big.
No.
Let's move on to speaking of Karl Malone, our next position, which is very similar to him, would be LeBron.
Yes. I hear you say no one's that big except for LeBron.
Yes. So you got LeBron. And, you know, so in that group, you got to put, like, here's the thing. Like, do you put Kevin Durant in that group? Because certainly physically, he still has never, like, filled out to the point where he's strong.
Well, what's the hallmark of this category? Because I had them. That's sort of your combo forward category, right?
Like, I wrote elite scores. What's that?
It could be, they could play three, could play four, they can play inside, they can play outside, like.
Yeah. Yeah, so elite scorers, I kind of want to say from the wing, but it's not the wing, because you're right, they can post up and they can do stuff. Now, Durant doesn't post up nearly enough for me, but he does do it, and he's pretty good at it when he does.
Right.
So LeBron, Melo, Durant, like, yeah, who else is in that category? By the way, LaMarcus Aldridge would have to go back into Kevin Garnett position.
Yeah, absolutely right.
But who's in that, you know,
where do we put Draymond?
Draymond is an orphan.
He's an orphan. He's just anywhere. He's right. Uncategorizable.
Yeah, he is like, you know, he's not a Klingon, he's not a Earthling. What's the other guy in the Star Trek?
He's not a Klingon.
Romulan?
He's Romulan. He's the Borg.
Yeah,
he's, people will simulate you all. Yeah, wow. That's it for my Star Trek knowledge. Yeah. I'm a little
you know, there's not. I don't know if we're gonna solve that problem today.
Okay,
but you know, is Blake Griffin in that category?
Wow. Can he work the wing that well?
Yeah, well, you know, actually, I guess you can argue that Blake Griffin.
What about Paul George?
Well, I have Paul George in the, where did I have him? In the Leonard Butler.
Okay.
Because it's an elite wing defender and who also can score well. You know, this is challenging. You're right, because these guys can kind of go across different positions as well in theory.
Right.
Because
you need a certain level of, they're almost like bigger wing defenders. It's like they're the wing defenders who can also go inside due to their size.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm kind of looking up, like, you know, points per game, who the leaders are, just to see who jumps out at me for like being the elite scorers at that height, I guess, is what we're looking at, right?
Right.
You know,
where's like Derek Favors?
Yeah. Derek Favors is a more of a, he's like a traditional McHale type player, isn't he?
So he's going to be in the classic four. Okay.
But I feel like he doesn't stretch the floor like those guys do. Right, does Favors get out to 20 feet? I don't even know if he does that. I'll have to look, but I don't think so. I'm just looking at these other guys. So you talk about, so Durant and LeBron James are 4 and 5 in scoring in the league. And then other bigger, like Anthony Davis?
He's more of a center.
Okay.
Doesn't he play more like a center? What do you think? Like, I think he's...
No. I mean, he's not like a back-to-the-basket center, really, too much. He definitely,
and then,
you know...
Then he's classic four?
Yeah, I don't know. He might have more of that, of like, LeBron mellow stuff in him than the other way. He's a weird tweener as well. It's hard to pin it. But, by the way, if you look at the top 20 scorers per game, they're all guards.
Yeah.
I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, boom. You know, Durant and LeBron... And then it's like, you know, okay, there's the Paul George in there, Anthony Davis. But it's like, I would say at least over half are guards.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool that there's a few top teams that have kind of their revolve around two guards. I think it's kind of neat. I feel like that hasn't happened in a while. Maybe I'm just missing it, but like Toronto's team. Or, you know, I guess Washington's not elite, but like, the you know, how they revolve around two good guards. I think it's kind of cool. The Warriors, exactly.
Yeah,
it's exciting. It's fun.
It's fun. It is. I mean, it's also, you know, I don't think I want to go back to the days where they used to smash into each other all the time, and you know, the most rugged, you know, meanest team won. Like, I don't think you know, that was what was happening, you know, in the 90s. I don't think I want that.
No, it's big guys are. I'm trying to think of a metaphor for big guys, because it's like teams that stocked up on them suddenly have the surplus and you can't get rid of them.
Like the Bulls.
You know, I don't know if they're – what?
Like the Bulls.
Like the Bulls. Like Boston. Like nobody – you know, every team has – they're like, no, thanks. We already got a guy who can give us, you know, 12 points and 9 boards a game. Like, we have that guy. There's right. too many of them. I mean, you can't play – I don't know. You know, there's like warehouses filled with them these days.
Well, what I like about that then is that we're not going to have like the Kurt Thomases anymore who are going to play till they're 40, right, in that role.
Right.
You know, you're going to be able to find a guy who's cheap and is 20 years old who's got energy, who's going to bang and grab some rebounds, right? Like for a while there, we had those guys who were so old and like I always feel like they're just taking someone else's job, you know, and stringing out their career for 2 extra years. In a way that always kind of made me sort of, you know, granted, I'm not that guy, and who knows, those guys probably needed those 2 extra years for their nest egg or whatever, but still,
right.
I always felt like them, like, you know, why is he still, like Tayshaun Prince is not an example of, like, the big rugged guy, but, like, why he is still playing is beyond me, and taking minutes from anybody else on that team is crazy.
Kind of like Jermaine O'Neal in the last few years he was playing.
Yeah, Jermaine O'Neal.
Formerly really good players. Yeah, right.
Right, and
whereas,
then yeah,
now you can go find a Larry Nance Jr. and have the same guy with more energy.
Oh yeah, and I said it last night. And I said it a few weeks ago. Larry Nance Jr. is the best player on the Lakers. At least he's the guy that plays the right way more often.
Yeah, there was a sequence last night. I caught a few minutes of the game. There was a sequence where he had 3 offensive rebounds in a single possession, and. It's nice. It's just that's the kind of energy that, you know, that every team can use.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like who can't use that guy?
So, and here's the thing, like, I'm trying to say, like, I needed to explain to people who like want to dismiss him as whatever, is, you know, and here's a couple things. If he were to develop a jump shot, mm-hmm. and a little confidence and like believe in himself, oh my God, then you'd really have something great. Because he already has those intangibles of playing really hard, like the Draymonds do. He just doesn't believe. You can see he seems a little scared still. He doesn't seem to be comfortable enough. But if he ever did get that and then was able to shoot from, you know, 18 or 20, oh my God, the guy would be like his father, you know, at least that good. But then the other thing is he's a little older, right?
Right.
So there's some weird thing where, you know, because the dude is 23, he ceases to be able to improve anymore.
Look, I mean, we've talked about how maybe the Lakers are right now failing to develop their guys as well as they should. And the fact that he is performing so well compared to where he was drafted this early on this Lakers team with this lack of development probably says a lot about him. And I think it bodes well for him for the future if right. he can keep doing what he's doing.
Well, and then you can argue that, you know, maybe all the development he got was in college, and it was only a matter of him just getting more minutes for the Lakers, and the Lakers have done nothing to develop him, right?
Right. Like, yeah, I mean, maybe it is the fact that he just has opportunity that he might not have had on another team.
Yeah,
like if he were drafted by San Antonio or, you know,
right,
Golden State, he wouldn't be getting these minutes.
Yeah, and so all I know is I'm watching him play, and he sets screens correctly. He rolls the right direction, the right footwork. I mean, he's an incredible athlete. He can dunk and get up off the floor, and he seems just like a generally nice guy. Just simply wants to do right, you know. And you know, some of the other guys might be a little surly out there, but he just seems eager. And, you know, I gravitate toward those kind of players because it's like, you know, those are the guys you can work with. So did you see the report last night? Did you hear Aldridge's report that D'Angelo Russell doesn't know what he doesn't know and has no idea how to ask Byron Scott for that information that he needs to know to get better?
No, I didn't see that. I saw the kind of conflicting reports that he was or maybe was not available for in a trade, but I did not see that.
Let me see if I can find the thing while we're talking.
I'm not on the, you know, I'm not on the inside, so I have no idea, you know, what he's like or this is terrible reporting, but like I feel bad for the guy. I mean, it's going to be such a lost year in his development.
Here's some information for you. So, because I was listening to it last night on the reporting on the game on TNT. So David Aldridge said, this is the quote, "One thing that D'Angelo Russell said this morning I thought was very telling is that he literally does not know what questions to ask Byron Scott about how to get better. I mean, he wants to get better. He knows he makes mistakes, but he is so young at age 19, he doesn't know what he doesn't know. In terms of getting better as an NBA point guard, he's just lost." And then Eric Pincus, my buddy over at LA Times, was saying that, you know, the other quote from Russell was, "I've never really played point guard in my life. I went to college. I was a basketball player. I played every position. And now it's just thrown at me. It's something you just got to adjust to, and it's the hardest position in the league." Anyway, so that kind of stuff. So I don't know what to make of that, really. It seems worse on Russell's end. Like, you know, you just go to talk to Byron and just say, "Hey, let's have some film sessions. Let's talk," like, you know.
But is... Ah, wow, that's tough. I mean, I don't, you know, does the culture of that team allow you to do that?
Right.
I mean, the culture of that team is still, it's still a very Byron Scott, Kobe Bryant team. Like, does it allow you to
right.
show weakness, to show, "I don't understand this, I
need
help"?
Are you allowed
to do that, or are you expected to just, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and figure it out?
That's very interesting. Great
point. And they've played pretty hot and cold with him. With, you know, he's our point guard of the future. He's not doing things right. You know, he starts, he sits. It's confusing. It's got to be confusing for him.
Yeah, and you can see it. And like, listen, I see the talent. There's a lot of talent there, and people are all arguing with me about the Larry Nance thing, saying, "Oh, of course, he's 19. He's much better. He has more talent, without question." But you know, will he ever figure it out? Like, I don't know. And that's why I'm like, as of now, I like Larry Nance better. But yeah, it's an interesting conundrum because they have, you know, you have coaches, you have development coaches who are supposed to be every day working with you and helping you talk about decisions and right. how you fit in. And if he's saying that, you know, this long into this first season, that's a little concerning too.
Yeah, it's really, you know, for a team that really was the, you know, the crown jewel of the NBA for so long, it's really kind of, it's kind of sad to see how, you know, the culture has just crumbled around there. It's really, it's sad. It's sad to see that in the Lakers.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, whether they, you know, when Luke Walton takes over, maybe they'll change that culture.
Do you think, is that what's going to happen next? Is Walton the next coach?
I think Walton's going to have his pick of wherever he wants to go.
Right.
And so,
So Byron's gone. That's what we think.
Yeah, I think he's probably gone. And I heard an interesting rumor. I'm wondering if I can even say.
Oh, come on. Sure.
All right, you know, it's late into the podcast. You know, we probably have, you know, less people listening.
Yes, I think the listeners who are still with us should be rewarded.
Okay.
By hearing the rumor.
So here's a rumor, and it's totally unsubstantiated. Just pretend that I made it up.
Okay.
Derek Fisher isn't going to make it after this year.
Ooh. Really?
So, put that in your hat.
Wait a second. Wait. He's got a fairly – I mean, I guess it probably doesn't matter to them. They have so much money. But he's got a fairly big contract too, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, you know, it could very well be like there's a play for Luke Walton and, you know, he's a triangle guy. He's a Phil Jackson guy. They're going to want him and, you know, they're going to have to – you know, Luke Walton's going to get snatched up in the offseason without question. So, you know
– Really?
Think about that because that's that would be interesting. I don't see Luke Walton ever taking that job. I think he's a California guy, West Coast guy. He was part of the Lakers anyway. I you know what I mean? I just don't see him wanting to take it in the same vein that, you know, Steve Kerr turned it down.
Yeah, well, look, if the Lakers get the first or second pick, you know, in addition to the young core they have, and he's allowed to put a system in place, it could actually be pretty exciting. It could be an exciting job.
Oh, I agree. I think the Lakers are on their way, but you're right. The argument could very well be that with the culture they have in place now, and part of that just goes away naturally when Kobe retires, that's not going to work. But once it's gone and you have it, you can recreate the culture with what you have. Jesus, yeah, those four kids they got, that's a great place to start.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you could start asking questions like, does Mitch Kupchak survive this? But I think it's hard to know exactly what was thought of internally as they put this team together this year, you know, like what they thought the goal was, and you know, when they signed guys like Roy Hibbert, what they were really thinking. I just think it's hard to really know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I couldn't think that they would have thought they would have been much better than they are now. I mean, I think that they thought they were going to compete for like the eighth spot, but at least on the record, that's what they were saying. But you know.
No, I think they pretty much have been tanking this entire year, and they knew that they were painted in a corner, and they didn't want to give up this pick to Philadelphia. And
right.
I think they see this pick as I think they've been tanking.
Right. And by the way, you realize that they have to give the pick up. Like if they keep it this year, then it's still going to go away at some point.
Yeah, I think it's 2 years. I think it's top three protected in 2016 and 2017, and then it's unprotected in 2018.
Right.
So that gives them, you know, it gives them at least a little bit of time to kick the can down the road on this one.
Right. And you know, and if they're passing through mediocrity at that point, it might be a decent pick, but you know, and they're going to lose it. But you know, that if it's probably worth it, they can get. I mean, Jesus Christ, if they get what's his face, if they get Ben Simmons,
yes,
then there's no team better primed to really compete. In that like that third year of Ben Simmons' career.
Well, that's and I was gonna say, and that's like the fixes in pick, right? Like that's if the Lakers pull number one, that's your frozen envelope of the year, right?
Right.
Did you see? Speaking of draft picks, like how many picks Boston has next year? We talked about this. Like it's ridiculous.
How many? How many do they have?
They're gonna have three in the first round. Okay, so they're gonna have the Nets pick, which will be. You know, it's going to be top five or whatever. You know, it could be the first, third, fourth, fifth. It'll be right up there. Then they keep their own, so mid-first round. And they also have Dallas's pick, which I think is like top 13 protected, but Dallas will be in the playoffs, so they'll have Dallas's pick. So they got three in the first. And then I think they have four or five picks in the second round, including Philadelphia's pick. So, which is almost like another late first rounder, you know?
They have, and
granted, second round, you can do some draft and stash guys. That's fine. But didn't they have like four first rounders this past year? How many young guys can they have at once?
Right. Like they don't have enough roster spots.
No, they need more than anyone. They need to start packaging and trying to trade around and get something
going. They need that three or four for one so badly on that
right.
team.
I mean, listen, they've already got 1/5 of the second round picks. It's like, why don't they keep going and see what happens?
Exactly.
a second round pick, and you get a second round pick.
I mean, and again, it might be the kind of thing where they're able to just sell those off at the draft when there's some guy that some team wants. It's never bad to have a second round pick. You can always cut the guys anyway, but there's too many guys and not enough spots going on there.
Yeah. So you think there's going to have to be some deals being made by the Celtics before the deadline?
I think it would be great if they could make a trade before the deadline, because if they could add, they could really make a run. They could. Yes, but they need to add a bigger piece. I think here's the guy. You're going to say I'm crazy, because I know we've talked about this a little bit. Here's the guy I think they should make a run at. It's James Harden.
Aha, interesting.
Yes.
Now, before they fired McHale, you would have had the McHale-Ainge connection.
Yes.
Which would have greased that wheel a little bit. But you think that the Celtics could trade for Harden. Okay, well, let's just...
Can they? I don't know.
Let's entertain that thought for a second.
Okay, let's do that.
As we move on toward, wrapping this up.
Oh, yeah, wait. We need to wrap up the position. Should we just go through them real fast? Offensive center, defensive center?
Yeah, we could. I mean, I kind of petered out a little bit toward the end here with my positions. But, yeah, I have the Joakim Noah, who was the, Andrew Bogut, DeAndre Jordan.
Yep.
I'm trying to think about... Andre Drummond almost fits into that because he's still so raw offensively. Mm-hmm. But he does have a move or two, and they continually give it to him and ask him to make those moves, which is crazy, but they do. And then you got the Marc Gasol, the Boogie, Tim Duncan position.
Yeah, I think I broke him down as the offensive center. I said Brook Lopez and the defensive center, or Dwight Howard.
Brook Lopez.
Similar thing, yes.
So here's the problem is Marc Gasol spans both those. He's really a defensive center too.
Well, he's a big guy. He should get two positions.
Yeah, at least two.
Pound for pound, he gets two positions.
Yeah, dos.
Okay, so let me be crazy. Let me be crazy for a second on James Harden.
Okay.
So Harden's got 2 more years on his contract at about roughly $17-18 million a year. Great contract, right?
If you look at Houston's roster, so next year, so they got Harden, right? They got Dwight Howard's a free agent, going to be a free agent. So they got a big decision, do they re-sign him or not? They're a team you go up and down the roster, guys they've got signed. They have non-guaranteed contracts to Ty Lawson and Corey Brewer. They've got Trevor Ariza for 2 more years, Patrick Beverley for 2 more years, KJ McDaniels for 2 more years, and then Sam Decker, Clint Capella, I can't pronounce this guy's name. You're talking like they're the team you could go, wow, they really have 4 spots they could fill. They could really add an infusion of 4 guys on this team.
Yeah.
And change things up. They could do that. If they're the kind of team that if you said, look, for James Harden, we're going to give you the Nets pick and, we'll send over either Isaiah or Crowder, possibly both. And then another guy, one of the big men on Boston, Sullinger, one of the big guys, maybe another first rounder down the road. So let's just say, Just off the top of my head, we're gonna go James Harden in exchange for Isaiah Thomas.
You can do a David Lee.
He's a free agent. Only if they needed to do it for money, which they probably won't.
Okay.
But let's say it was Isaiah and
Crowder.
Do you think you could do Isaiah Crowder and the Nets pick?
Well, you gotta look at it from the Rockets' point of view. If they're gonna give that out, they're gonna want something at that position, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I guess so. So let's say it was that trade. I don't know if Boston would do that. Okay, so Harden for Isaiah Crowder and the number whatever the New Jersey Nets pick is gonna be. Would Boston do that?
They have the Nets pick unprotected. That's one of their stupid
unprotected.
Things. Wow. So that's a top 5 pick.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Boston balks at trading Crowder. That's possible because they got him signed for through 2020 at completely reasonable. His salary never tops $8 million. And he signed for 4 more years after this year.
Right. That's I don't know. Listen, if they could get James Harden, though, I would have a hard time believing they wouldn't, try that.
But a trade like that, that's a team where if you're Houston, you might say the core they have, the Harden-Dwight core, which may have to be broken up anyway after Dwight leaves, is possibly... But what happens? Not going to win in the West. What are they, in the seventh position right now?
Right. And there's no hope in the future going forward either, really, with it. So, but here's the thing. So they trade James Harden to get those back. Dwight Howard leaves. So now they really don't have any of that, which is that acceptable? What will they do at center then?
Well, I mean, first of all, they can ask for a big guy back, right?
And by the way, Dwight Howard, why wouldn't he re-sign? They're probably going to be able to offer him the most money, yada, yada.
So they can re-sign Dwight Howard if they want to, or they can go get – there's other bigs around. We said that. There's people willing to trade bigs, right? A lot of bigs around. You can always add one.
Okay.
But it's you basically say, look, we have to rebuild. And they go for a bigger rebuild.
Or you know, they could finally get Powell.
Or they take two draft picks. What?
They could finally get Pau Gasol.
They'd get Pau Gasol if they wanted to. Or they could say, you know, look, we're going to have a rough year for next year or two, and we're going to play for 2018.
Well, I think Daryl Morey probably has some sort of weird rule that Simmons always talks about where you can't trade that star. But
And that know. May be, but and I'm probably crazy for even suggesting this, but I think this is one of those places where there is a possibility that it could match up and make sense.
I think if we're talking about winning, and if that's supposed to be the goal, which it doesn't always align with like all the other stuff that you can make money off of, then I get it. I think that there's a fundamental flaw with everything they're doing with this roster, right? As there are with every roster except for the Spurs and the Warriors, right? And so, yeah, like why sit on the pot?
Well, I mean, look, if you're looking at the rosters in the West and you're saying like, okay, the Clippers. Now, we don't necessarily think this core, the Clippers, is a championship core, but they're close enough, right? They're close enough to a good team that you never know. A player becomes available. Maybe something breaks their way. You can make a case for them keeping this core together because they're in the mix. But a team like Houston isn't really even in the mix anymore.
Right.
Their window kind of came and went awfully fast.
Well, maybe unless Josh Smith is going to change this whole thing around. But and remember, since they took over, they are better. They have a better record than they did. But you're right. I got to take a lot of film on them and really look at what's happening here because
they're basically a 500 team.
Right. But the record I saw for JB Bickerstaff was 4 or 5 games over 500.
Okay.
And I know that they were a couple games under when he took over, right? They're two games over now.
Yes. And they are better since he's taken over.
A little bit.
True.
But, you know.
But, I mean, even if you look at the standings, they're 3.5 games away from being bounced from the playoffs.
Right.
That's sort of the position they're in now.
Right. And you can argue that, you know, it was a mirage anyway because they never should have made it to the conference finals.
Right.
They should have lost in 5 to the Clippers, and that would have been it.
No, right. They're also, you know, they're 2.5 games behind the Grizzlies for the 5th seed. Okay, so you kind of get the idea of where they are. They're somewhere, they're in that range, give or take, but they are so far from being the best team in the West that right. I think you rebuild.
Yeah. Well, here's our homework for next week.
What's that?
Figure out who the Memphis Grizzlies are going to trade to become a title contender.
Okay.
Because they're sneaky, by the way. Look at that. They're in the 5th position, and they're moving up. They weren't that good earlier. You always forget about them, but there might be something there that could actually finally get them vaulted.
That, you know what? If the playoffs were today, Grizzlies-Clippers would be a really interesting series, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be a fun series.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to find out how that plays out. But, Brian, again, I think we solved some serious problems tonight. Today,
as always, it is always a pleasure.
All right, great. Well, thank you. And then thank you to 3M for sponsoring the show.
Oh, thank you, 3M. Thank you for all you do and the notes you have on my screen right now.
Terrific. Well, beautiful. I will check in with you later. And
thank you, Coach.
You got it. Don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We are a conversation. You in? Brian, are you in?
Yes, I am in.